101.3 FM, KRNG Fallon, Reno, Fernley, Sparks, Nevada, and surrounding. Biggest Little Radio presents the Rural Report with Robert Gray.
Hey everybody, good afternoon. It's Tuesday, April 25th, and this is Robert Perea, publisher and editor of the Fernley Reporter, and this is the Rural Report on Biggest Little Radio 101.3 FM. Today in the studio with us, I have a special guest, Meg Raganese, the Public Information Officer for the Nevada Department of Transportation. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, and hello everyone.
Then as a reporter, as a reporter, it's always great when you have sources that return phone calls and emails promptly, and you know you're one of the best. So before we get, we have a lot of ground to cover, but I just want to
appreciate you for that.
A lot of ground to cover though, and you know, one of the issues going on in the region here, and Fallon and Yarrington are preparing for some flooding, and you guys have done a lot of road work, and especially in the Fallon area. You know, tell us a little bit about what was done over there.
Yes, there's been a lot done. And so, of course, as a lot of the community members know, that TCID, in conjunction with Churchill County, the City of Fallon, and the Bureau of Rec, is really working to make sure that Lahontan Reservoir stays at manageable levels. So as part of that, they're trying to drain down the reservoir for the expected, you know, continued melt that we'll have from the mountains. And so what we at NDOT are doing is, as you mentioned, we've had actually two projects so far, three really, one was a smaller one, to help kind of mitigate that and make sure that our roads aren't a barrier to those important flood mitigation efforts. And so what drivers saw is, about maybe a month and a half or 2 months ago, we installed additional culverts on US 95 just south of Fallon, so that as that water from Lahontan is being drained out to the Carson Sink area, the Carson Lake area, that 95 hopefully remains safe, doesn't become an impediment to that water getting and drained to where it needs to go. We did something similar on US 50 just east of Fallon, where we installed six additional culverts in that area. And then just last week, we actually worked with those same organizations to cut a section of Baffert Lane at the Carson River to allow better river drainage through that area. There was some debris and sediment built up in the river there. So cutting a small section of that road where it joined the bridge really helped that water flow more effectively through there. So those were three things so far. We continue to work very closely with those agencies and, you know, keep an eye on any other potential state road impacts that they might be. But so far, everything has worked very effectively. We appreciate drivers' understanding and patience with it as well.
Trying to avoid a situation similar to what happened over here by Pyramid Lake, right?
Absolutely, yes. Now that was, you know, massive flood damage from the flood event itself in early January. And what we had there by Pyramid Lake is, that was actually State Route 446, which is on the south side of Pyramid Lake, was really our most heavily impacted state road following those early January floods. There were literally ravines, some probably 50 foot deep, carved through the road from that massive.
Yeah, the photos were pretty dramatic.
They are very dramatic. And so we were able to repair that and reopen State Route 446 in early March. And like I said, that was our most impacted state road. But we actually continue repairs to, for example, pothole and roadside erosion repair on Interstate 80 west of Reno. So it's been a very, very, it's been a continuous process for to make sure that our state roads are clear and open and safe for all travelers.
If you're listening and you'd like to ask a question, as always, you can chime in two ways. We have the chat box at biggestlittleradio.com. Just get online, type in a message, or the studio hotline here. Call us at 775-404-1115 if you have any traffic-related or road-related questions for Meg. We're speaking with Meg Raganese from Nevada Department of Transportation. one of the things, a lot of the projects that NDOT does are planned years in advance, and then all of a sudden a flood happens, and tomorrow you've got to go fix a road. What has that been like?
You know, that is an excellent question. And so, like you said, we really do prioritize our projects years in advance so that we're in the best position to be able to gather the most federal funding that we can and really properly prioritize and plan those for the road funding that's available. But when an event like this comes along where our roads are heavily impacted, of course, we need to get those open and safe. And so that becomes the priority. As far as funding specifically, though, for our state roads and how those were impacted with this winter storms, we've actually been very lucky because a lot of those qualify for federal emergency reimbursement. We've already received $3 million in federal reimbursement funds for some of those road repairs. It doesn't cover them all, but we're working and have applied for additional reimbursement. So from that perspective, we're lucky because what that means is that with that federal reimbursement, we don't have to use state funds that were already prioritized perhaps for projects and other important road improvements coming later this summer.
So we're lucky then that something like what happened at Pyramid Lake doesn't mean that the construction project scheduled this summer gets postponed a year because of that.
And that is true, yes. And both the governor and the president did make emergency declarations, which really helped open up that available funding. Like I said, we've already received $3 million in emergency federal reimbursement and hope to receive more as well to help offset that so that we can keep our other important road projects on schedule this summer.
So as we look forward here and a lot of snow still up in the mountains, are you guys kind of planning daily? How does that work to kind of see where problem spots are looking?
Absolutely. And a lot of it really involves coordinating with local agencies. I mean, we have coordinated very closely with TCID, Churchill County, Fallon, and Bureau of Rec for some of those flood mitigation efforts in Fallon. And there's also a lot of other coordination that's gone along in some of the other areas. For example, Washoe Lake and I-580 runs alongside Washoe Lake. Washoe Lake is filling up quite substantially. And so what we've done is we've actually worked with federal and local water masters and gate masters to help bring down some of that water by dropping it into Steamboat Creek. So there's a lot of local efforts that we're doing as well, working with other agencies, other organizations and groups to help mitigate any type of impacts that it might have on our state roads. But as we know, you know, any type of change in the weather could really be a game changer, could change everything. So we do very, very closely monitor. We, of course, monitor the USGS water flow meters at many of the rivers near our state bridges as well, so that we can keep a really close eye on that.
That's probably one thing that you might not think of a Department of Transportation and, you know, being so in tune with weather and that.
It's true. And, you know, for myself, that really has never resonated quite as truly as it had this year, even just as a PIO, not someone out there on the road as our maintenance and construction folks are day in and day out, but even myself working for the Department of Transportation, I find my job duties dictated by the weather, which, like I said, and that's not even our maintenance folks. So that goes to tell you how, just to your point, how important it is and how much weather plays a factor in our roads and in our daily travel and what we as a department try to do to keep our roads safe and clear.
Yeah, I realize in the winter, the weather's always a factor and you know, sending notices about chain controls or road closures and that type of stuff, but.
Exactly, and we're gonna go through the summer with this one, with those potential flood impacts for sure. So drivers should just be aware to, you know, keep an eye out for that there might be some flood mitigation efforts that need to be made as that water comes down from the mountains. And one really good resource for that for state roads specifically is nvroads.com, or by dialing 511 before driving. And by doing that, by visiting nvroads or dialing 511, you'll get up-to-the-minute state road information and any type of closure or construction information as well.
Yeah, I think people are probably used to doing that in the wintertime, but, you know, this time of year and as we get into summer, not usually so much.
It's so true. Yep. Yeah. So definitely keep that website address and that phone number handy, because it will be an important part in our summer travels as well in this area.
So speaking of roads being planned years in advance, that brings us kind of to USA Parkway, and that, you know, that road has been in the works for many, many years, and then you finally broke ground on the extension from the industrial park over to Highway 50 last June. How is that going, and are we still looking like on track to finish that this fall?
Such an important roadway, and we are on track to finish that. So, like you said, that USA Parkway extension will take the USA Parkway from where it ends, about 6 miles into the Trick Center off of I-80, all the way to US 50 in the Silver Springs area. And in February, we actually reached 50% completion of construction, and construction has continued very successfully even since that point. And right now, what drivers are going to see over the next few weeks is the beginning of construction that of the roundabout that will connect the future USA Parkway with US 50 in the Opal Avenue area of Silver Springs. So we want drivers to know, if they drive or commute in that area, make sure to give yourself a little extra travel time, because there will be some lane shifts and reduced travel speeds through the summer as we construct that roundabout. And there's already some shoulder closures right now that drivers have seen. We're actually constructing the shoe fly, or the lane shift, that will take drivers and continue US 50 around the construction area of the roundabout as they build that this summer.
So a roundabout at Opal Avenue in Silver Springs, where the highway will come down out of the hills. And then what's planned at the current intersection where 50A and 95A meet? Are there changes there also?
Yes, and that will actually be in future years. So specifically in the next two or so years, we're looking at widening US 50 from where in the Silver Springs area, where it currently goes down to one lane each direction. We're looking at widening that to two lanes in each direction, all the way to the US 50 and 95A junction in the center of Silver Springs. So that improvement will be coming over the next 2 years or so.
When will the work on the roundabout at Opal Avenue start?
So they actually just started this week, but it's shoulder work right now.
Okay.
And then beginning next Monday, May 1st, is when drivers will see that lane shift. So basically, if you're traveling on US 50 through the Opal Avenue area in Silver Springs, your lanes will be slightly shifted and your travel speeds will be reduced as well. So make sure to keep an eye out for that. That will continue through this summer as we build that roundabout.
Okay, so those won't be traffic stops where you stop and waiting. You'll just have a slowdown?
Just a slowdown. Okay. You're absolutely correct. Yeah, now there could be some, you know, heavy hauling that temporarily stops traffic for a matter of minutes, but in general, drivers will not have to stop. They'll be able to continue to drive through on US 50, but it will be important that you slow down because there will be slower construction speeds in the area.
Okay. So USA Parkway, you mentioned what an important project that is for the state. You know, how does it, you know, regionally, is that a lot of the traffic that currently comes from Silver Springs through Fernley and connect to Interstate 80 will be now coming, at least some of that traffic will be coming up USA Parkway and hit 80 in that region. Is there any information on how that will affect traffic here?
You know, and that's a really good question. So just like you said, what will happen is some of that traffic that might be heading, you know, to the Reno area and then to Sacramento or wherever, you know, points beyond that, some of that traffic will end up not going 95A, but through the USA Parkway. And as our area continues to develop, there's no way to know exactly, you know, what those truck counts will be years from now. But there will be some traffic that will, just as you described, be detoured onto USA Parkway. But what's really important about it is just how, as you reference, it's going to be really a game changer for the entire region. For us, the Department of Transportation, it really helps enhance mobility through the entire area. Now you have another corridor connecting I-80 to US 50. That's a corridor that can be used if there's, you know, an emergency or incident-related closure on 95A, for example, or weather-related closure. That's just another corridor that's available during those events. But even more than that, on a day-to-day basis, what it really does is it opens up a lot of job opportunities. You know, for example, we project that building that USA Parkway extension is really going to reduce travel times from certain areas of US 50 by as much as 38% traveling between USA 50 corridor to Reno. And just by virtue of that, by almost cutting those travel times as much as 40%, what you do is you actually create different job opportunities, because now people do have a feasible commute to travel, let's say, from Silver Springs into Reno for a job opportunity, or vice versa, wherever it might be. It really opens up not just travel opportunities, but even job and employment opportunities that weren't available for just by virtue of shortening that commute.
All right. Well, we've got more to talk about here. I'm talking with Meg Raganese of the Nevada Department of Transportation. This is the Rural Report on Biggest Little Radio, 101.3 FM. I'm Robert Perea, publisher and editor of the Fernley Reporter. We'll be back after a short message.
Follow the conversation on our chat box at www.biggestlittleradio.com. 101.3 Biggest Little Radio presents the Rural Report with Robert Gray.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Robert Perea, publisher and editor of the Fernley Reporter, and this is the Rural Report, if I can say that properly, on Biggest Little Radio, 101.3 FM. I'm talking with Meg Raganese, the public information officer for the Nevada Department of Transportation. If you have a question, you can chime in at the chat box at biggestlittleradio.com or call us on the studio hotline, 775-404-1115. We've talked a little bit about some of the projects and things going on outside the rest of the rural area here, but right here in Fernley, there's a couple of things going on. Between here and Silver Springs, there's some work that you actually drove through this morning on the way. How's that going?
Exactly. So it's going well, and that started last Monday. And what that is a project to repave alternate US 95 from Silver Springs 50 Junction all the way to the Fernley High School area. It's about 11 miles, and we'll be repaving that as well as adding some additional passing lanes and some other improvements as well. And construction's going well. Drivers are mainly seeing shoulder closures right now, but later this summer, as the repaving begins, drivers should expect some periodic construction-related travel delays.
Okay. And just received a question from a listener who wants to know if there are any plans to connect Nevada Pacific to Highway 50. From Interstate 80 to Highway 50 on Nevada Pacific?
Good question, and not right now. There are no plans for that. But at Nevada Pacific, we're actually looking at the potential of a signal there. We do what we call a signal warrant analysis, which is looking at the geometry of that roadway intersection, as well as the type of travel and speeds that people travel through there, the number of vehicles that travel through there. So we don't know yet exactly whether through that signal analysis, whether we'll be able to put a signal in there, but it is something that we're looking at right there at Nevada Pacific.
What would it require for that to connector to be built, Nevada Pacific, to connect 50 to 80? Is there benchmarks that have to be met before that happens?
You know, and really good question. There are no very specific benchmarks, but we always do look at, kind of like we talked about USA Parkway, you know, the ability to enhance connectivity and mobility in our area. So we're always looking at those opportunities. We, of course, have to balance those with available funding and that type of thing. So that's a balancing act, and that is something that we'll continue to look at as the community grows, any type of needs like that. But right now, there are no immediate plans for that.
As a matter of functionality in this area, that would be actually a huge benefit, because
absolutely,
a lot of the traffic through the roundabout and then the stretch of highway that I also want to talk to you about on going east. Of the roundabout on 50 alternate, you know, a connector there to bring traffic through there and minimize the amount of traffic through the roundabout and that busy stretch of highway would really be a benefit for this region.
It would, and like I said, that's always the type of thing that we look at and try to balance with available funds, and it's something that we'll continue to look at as well.
Mm-hmm. So what would be required, or what would be for a stoplight to be put in at Nevada?
So some of the things that we look at as part of what we call signal analysis, like we're doing right now at the Nevada Pacific intersection there, is the amount of traffic that comes through, the type of turn movements that are being made. So for example, is there one major direction that people are turning to and from? The geometry of the road, does it lend itself? Does it have the sight distance prior to a potential future signal for people to be able to see and stop or slow appropriately? a lot of those things go into a signal analysis. So there's a lot of different elements that we'll be looking at through that signal warrant analysis to see if there is a signal that could potentially be placed there. We don't know for sure right now, but we are going through that process to evaluate and see if it is the potential of installing a signal there.
Mm-hmm. That stretch of highway has been kind of a point of debate. A lot of people in town, some people want the speed limit lowered, and it was just increased about 3 years ago. What is going on with that? Is there any study going on there?
So that's a very important question. And a lot of times people will see, you know, that the speed limit is increased and wonder why. Because, of course, you know, with higher speeds can come more severe crashes. But from an engineering perspective, what we do, and we did actually in 2014 conduct a speed study on that section just east of the Fernley roundabout. And what we do is, through those speed studies, we look at some of the same things that I referenced in the traffic signal analysis. So, you know, the type of vehicle usage, the type of speeds being traveled, the roadway geometry as well. Does it lend itself to lower or higher speeds, or are there any certain needs, maybe a new intersection there, that type of thing that we'll look at. But one thing that really plays an important part is what we call speed differentials. And just like it sounds, that the difference that the different vehicles might be traveling. And we do not want to artificially lower speed limits to a place that's severely lower than the average vehicle is traveling, because then what you have is you have the potential of increased rear-end collisions and traffic crashes because you have such disparate or different speeds being traveled. And that's what we found in that area east of the roundabout. We found that traffic was actually going more than 10 miles an hour above the posted speed limit, creating that speed differential that I described, or that potentially dangerous situation where there was traffic traveling at very different speeds. So to do that, what we did as part of the analysis is looked at those speeds already being traveled and raised the speed limit just to make sure that there was a smoother flow and safer flow of traffic through the area.
So basically then what you're saying is that it's more about speeding up the slower drivers than slowing down the fast drivers?
No, actually what it's really about is smoothing out traffic so that we don't have that speed differential, so that we don't have vehicles traveling at very different speeds, because then what you have is the potential for the rear end collisions that I mentioned. You might have people trying to pass in certain areas where passing is allowed, and it might not actually be, you know, safe at that moment to do so, but they feel that they want to travel further or faster, feel that the person in front of them is going too slow, and that might not be the case, and then potentially pass at an unsafe point. And so we see a lot of those issues happening when you do have that speed differential, and we don't want that. We want the road to be as safe as possible. So that's why we did change that speed limit in that area.
Mm-hmm. That study was interesting to me because you mentioned drivers going 10 miles, I think 13 miles an hour faster than the speed limit is what the information you sent to me from. A part of that, I guess, is just makes me wonder, do people drive faster than the speed limit? Because, the study kind of takes the stance that people drive as fast as they're comfortable driving. Whereas, if the speed limit's 55 instead of 65, mm-hmm. Do people go 70 whether it's 55 or 65, or do they just go a certain, how it does the speed limit dictate how fast they drive?
And you know, that's a really key and important fundamental engineering question. So in our transportation engineering world, really what our belief is, and this is nationwide, is that people will travel as fast as they feel safe doing so. That's not always truly safe. I mean, obviously, you know, we see speeders who are way out of the realm of safety. That is not safe. That's not something that we encourage. But we do know that drivers, not just in Nevada, not just here locally, but across the nation, are going to travel at the speed that they feel comfortable. If you artificially lower that speed greatly, they're not going to follow it. And some might, and that's where you get that speed differential that we have been talking about. So really, you do find, as a engineering concept, that drivers will drive the speed that they feel comfortable doing so. That doesn't mean that that's always the best speed, and certainly speed limits are, you know, set on some other principles other than that as well. But we do find that, and that's an important thing to know, because if you set speed limits too artificially low, way below what drivers might feel comfortable and safe doing, you're going to create that potentially dangerous speed differential, which we don't want to do.
I'm really curious and interested if there were figures, like, for example, on Interstate 80, once you get east of Fernley and the speed limit goes up to 75, and it obviously didn't used to be that, is traffic at about the same speed as it was before the speed limit was raised? Was that speed limit raised because people were driving 75 instead of 65?
Really good question. So we actually right now, per legislation that was passed by the Nevada legislature, are looking at the potential of increasing speed limits to 80 miles per hour on certain sections of Interstate 80. We're doing a very thorough evaluation of that right now in conjunction with our law enforcement partners, the Nevada Highway Patrol and so forth. And in those discussions, one thing that was interesting to me to find out is that when the speed limit was initially raised, like you described, decades ago, that drivers at that point were actually already driving basically the speed limit that they do now. So you're looking at, you know, 75, maybe 80 miles per hour for some drivers. They were all already driving that when the speed limit was a lot less, was 65, for example. And which really does reinforce that concept that a lot of drivers will drive what they feel comfortable and safe doing so. So yes, it is true that even before the speed limit was raised, previously, there were drivers driving the current speed limit or even greater, so driving between 75 miles or 85 miles per hour on I-80.
And another question, getting back to the US 50, when I wrote a story last week about some of the people asking for the speed limit to be reduced on 50 there, and you sent me some information about accident counts on 50 between the roundabout to the end of Farm District Road. And one of the things I was curious about was, why did they study that whole stretch? That was several mile stretch, but most of the accidents that have happened, you know, basically within a mile of the roundabout. So why did the study include all the way out to the end of Farm District Road?
You know, we really want to be comprehensive. And so what that means is not just looking at an area that might have had, you know, crashes recently, but the entire corridor, to see if there's anything that needs to change along that entire corridor. So that's what that was about. And like you said, you know, we do continue to evaluate not just that section of 50 east of the roundabout, but all of our state roads, about 5,000 miles across the state, as full corridors, to make sure that we're doing all that we can to keep travel on those state roadways safe and connected.
And right, similar to what we're just talking about, but we have another question from a listener that wants to know, will you be making any changes to 50 Alternate and Nevada Pacific to reduce the amount of accidents that occur at that intersection?
So, you know, we are looking at that potential traffic signal that I was talking about. Mm-hmm. We don't know yet. We're doing a signal warrant analysis right now, so we don't know yet if there will be a future traffic signal installed there. But that's really one of the first things that we're looking at there. And we'll continue to look at that entire corridor and that actual intersection to see, as the area continues to develop, if there are any future improvements that need to be made as well.
That's kind of an interesting parallel there to a situation that you had in Dayton, where there were a lot of crashes on 50 there at the area around Smith's and then farther east in the Sutro area, and ended up putting a stoplight in the Sutro area in Dayton. That's kind of similar to what's going on out here. So do you ever compare two locales like that when you're doing these kind of studies, or is it solely based on the number of cars that go past that spot?
You know, we really do look at them on an individual basis, because the type of travel patterns, the type of speeds, or just the basic geometry of a roadway, mm-hmm. it's always going to be different. So we look at that on a very individual basis, mm-hmm. to make sure that we're fully addressing that particular roadway. Now, it doesn't mean that we can't use similar practices or, you know, type of traffic safety enhancements from one area in another area, because they certainly could apply, but we really look at them on a very individual basis to make sure that we're doing what's best for that particular corridor or intersection.
Those are really two very parallel situations, though, because it's right where here in Fernley, if you're heading eastbound, it's right where the speed limit increases. Same thing coming out of Dayton, if you're coming eastbound out of Dayton, right where the speed limit increases after you pass Smith's and that subdivision there and get out onto the more open highway and the speed limit. And then right where the speed limit increases is where people are trying to turn out of their subdivision into the onto the highway, which is basically the same situation that the people that live out by the golf course here at Fernley face.
Absolutely. And that is why we're doing that signal analysis here in the Fernley area. And what you're referencing by Dayton is Fortune Drive and the Fortune Drive intersection. Mm-hmm. And one thing about that as well is that there is a fire station in that area. There were in prior years actually plans for development on most all quadrants of that intersection on US 50 and Dayton as well, that intersection with Fortune Drive. So there are definitely parallels, as you said, but we like to look at them each individually to make sure that we're doing the most important and focused traffic safety improvements for that particular area and everyone driving those corridors or those intersections.
All right, we've been talking with Meg Raganese, the Public Information Officer for the Nevada Department of Transportation, and unfortunately we're just about out of time right now, but I'd like to thank you for coming in and talk to you. Maybe we could get you, there's so much ground we can cover, maybe we could get you back another time.
Oh, I would enjoy it. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it, and thank you everyone for your questions as well.
All right, and thank you for listening. Again, this is Robert Perea, publisher and editor of the Fernley Reporter, and this is the Rural Report on Biggest Little Radio 101.3 FM. Make sure you tune in again next Tuesday at noon, and we'll have another special guest. Thank you very much.